Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. You may have moved around a lot during your life, but I bet your passport isn't nearly as thick as Priyanka Mathew's. She has lived in 32 different places in 40 years. Priyanka's life was totally upended in August 1989 when she was only 9 years old. She was living in the city of Srinagar in Kashmir. She and her family were forced to leave because of the escalating violence. Priyanka was never able to move back to Kashmir, but she has made a great life for herself nonetheless. She moved to England and then to Michigan. Priyanka now lives in Los Angeles with her husband and children. Fun facts, Priyanka is a former talent agent, and she was Jack Black's partner at the production company Electric Dynamite. Priyanka captures this vast journey in her memoir called Bird Milk and Mosquito Bones.
I had originally sold this sort of series of lighthearted essays, which I was calling 16 Kitchens. It was about my family and all the moving around. And then I started writing the book and it became so much more than that. It became much more layered. I cried a lot. I laughed a lot. And by the time I had the manuscript, I realized that the title did not fit. So it was kind of like having a baby that I had decided the name of before I met the baby. So once I met the baby, I stomped around for a few weeks trying to think of the perfect title and nothing really worked. I knew it had to be something that was really going to punch people in the gut in a good way, I hope. And I came across this phrase, which, you know, I talk in the book about my love of the Kashmiri language, how specific it is. And I came across this phrase that I loved so much and it felt so beautiful and sad and delicate and interesting and invites hopefully the reader to lean in and ask some questions.
Mm-hmm. You were born in the city of Srinagar in Kashmir. Your life was totally upended when you were only nine. What happened?
I was born in Kashmir, and then we moved abroad when I was very small to kind of gather money to build this house back home, always with the idea of coming back because people didn't leave Kashmir at the time. It's a beautiful place and a very close-knit community. And so while we were abroad, there was a rapid uprising and militant activity in the late 80s, which caused my entire community to leave. And so my whole family, my extended family, left this one winter, 89, 90, and never went back. Everyone settled elsewhere. So the community has been since very scattered and sparse throughout the world. And we never went home again. And the house, which we did end up building, is gone forever. And the homeland is just a memory.
That's awful. That's really something like a heavy weight to have to bear over all these years, isn't it?
It has been. I think my feeling was always, listen, we're physically safe. You know, I think I comforted myself with that for a long time. We're safe. We got out. We're safe. We have our bodies. We have our families. We have opportunities elsewhere. We are technically fine. But it wasn't until I got much older that I really allowed myself to feel the psychological and emotional weight of what it actually feels like to never feel like you're home or can go home ever again. And that's what the book's about.
Yeah, and it must affect your sense of self, right? It's kind of difficult to maintain a sense of self when you've lived in all these different places and you're not able to return to your home city.
It does. Again, something I didn't realize until later, because I think when you're in it, when I was in it, moving, I say something like 32 addresses over my 40 years, 5 countries, I didn't know any different. All I knew was to show up somewhere and connect immediately, to try and fit right in, to adjust an accent, to adjust my mannerisms, to feel local, to make myself feel more comfortable, to make other people feel more comfortable, not to stick out like a sore thumb. So the shape-shifting was a big part of it. It certainly allowed me to connect with people in a way that is not easy for most people. So I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, you know, it probably wasn't until much later that I was able to sit back and go, but who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I? Who, you know, I know that I can make myself comfortable in all these places, but who am I really? And so that's when the book started coming out of me, I think.
Mm-hmm. You've said that being Kashmiri has always been difficult, and you've made a good case for it there of just how difficult it's been. Is there anything else about it? I guess a lot of it is seeing the two wars between India and Pakistan over Kashmir. Can you talk a bit about that?
Other than the conflicts, which were really my parents' generation, you know, that this big one in 89, 90 was the one that affected me and my generation. But other than the conflicts, I believe that we're just really talking about, I think the term is a little bit overused. I wish there was another one, but we're talking about a deep, deep and a millennia long intergenerational trauma. So the character of my people can often operate from a place of fear and defensiveness. You know, when you're told for thousands of years that a certain party is trying to wipe you off the face of the earth, that affects how you raise your children, right? So that's really, really what I'm talking about. Not even just the like the political timeline, but the emotional timeline of that.
Yes, very well said. I share your love of books. And you say that even though you worshipped books, you thought writing them was for other people. But here we are talking about your memoir. What made you realize that you could write and you could write so beautifully?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I ever woke up and thought I can write so beautifully. I think after the birth of my first child, I had had creative adjacent jobs. I had been an agent representing actors and writers. I had been a producer, producing other people's movies, developing other people's scripts. And I think as I got closer and closer to actually making the thing, I felt more comfortable with the idea of taking the leap, because by that time it was not a leap, it was a half step. So instead of selling the things, I started writing the things, and it started feeling comfortable. And I started feeling like the writing sounded like me. I have always been a pretty good talker.
Yeah, and you're proving that in this interview.
Thanks. Listen, I was an agent. You got to have the gift of gab. It's part of the job, you know? So I knew I was good at that. But my preferred method of ingesting information is on the page. And so I thought, okay, if I can manage to translate this voice, the voice that I speak with, into words on the page, then I will have succeeded. And so I rolled up my sleeves and I attempted to do it first with essays. And those essays got published and I started to get attention for them. And then I started collecting them into the book. And so, yeah, it was a series of small steps, but here we are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned working as a talent agent in Los Angeles. Can you tell us a bit more about what that experience was like?
Yes. I mean, hilariously, being a talent agent was my first real job. I graduated from law school and I moved out to LA to work in the mailroom of an agency, kind of on a lark. I knew I didn't want to practice law. I really wanted to work in publishing, but publishing wasn't paying enough for me to pay off my law school loan. So LA at the time was quite cheap. And so I moved out. I started in the mailroom. I really connected with some of my colleagues who were higher ups, and they really invested in promoting me quite quickly. So, I mean, I welcome you to fact check this, but you can call my old bosses who had to call me one Christmas and say, we want to promote you to agent. And I said, I don't want to be an agent. I don't see that as my destiny. And they were kind of like, well, try it. We think you'd be good at it. And I did. I really enjoyed parts of it. I was a comedy agent. So a lot of it was going out to comedy clubs, you know, trawling YouTube for talent and like signing people and bringing them in and saying, hey, like, we're going to change your life. Like, I have a whole set of resources at my disposal that can make sure your voice is heard. And that was so, so fun for me. A lot of my clients that I signed, or all the clients that I signed, are very famous now. And that has been really satisfying to watch. I mean, they were going to be famous anyway, but it was so fun to be a part of that.
Are there any former clients you can mention, or would you be like Bartleby the Scrivener and prefer not to?
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. We're so close. I was put on teams of bigger movie stars. So I worked with Jack Black and Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Amy Poehler. Those were the teams. I did not have anything to do with the discovery and signing of those people. But when I started signing my own people, my first two clients were Ellie Kemper and Kumail Nanjiani. And those were a digital short that Ellie did, and I felt like I had to meet her. And I saw one joke that Kumail did on YouTube, and I knew I had to meet him, especially as we weren't seeing that many South Asian faces in comedy at the time. And so those were beautiful relationships. They're wonderful people. We're still very much in touch, and I watched from afar and how I knew that they were going to have big careers, and I'm really smug about how that's really paid off.
Yeah. You mentioned working with Jack Black. You were actually, you joined forces with him, right? At his production company, Electric Dynamite?
Yes, yes. I left agenting because he was getting an offer to start a TV side of his company, and he needed a producing partner who was going to build a slate for him. And I had been working with him in an agent capacity for many years. Originally, when I was an assistant, I was his agent's assistant. So I had known him from day one, and we really liked and trusted each other. So I went over there, and it was a small operation. It was just me and him for a few years. And he's just the best. I have my husband's permission to say he's the nicest, best person I've ever met.
Oh, really? You worked with him on the scripted comedy web series Ghost Girls. Can you tell us about that experience?
Jack and I say that it's the best show that nobody knows about, because it is. It was a digital series that we made for a defunct platform called Yahoo Screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really hard, funny, procedural comedy about two girls who saw ghosts. And I still just think it's one of the funniest, best things we've ever made together.
I understand that you're working on a mystery pilot for CBS. Can you tell us about it?
Oh my gosh, yes, I am. I am working on, it's inspired by a book called The Stranger Diaries, which was a British mystery from a few years back, a wonderful book. And the detective in it is a queer Indian woman. And I immediately loved this character and called this producer, Jessica Rhodes. She produces Black Mirror. And she also did Station 11. She's an incredible, not just an incredible producer, but an incredible reader. Like, she really cares about books. She works closely with authors when she adapts stuff, which is great. And I called her and I was like, here's my take. And she called CBS and they bought it right away. It was the most seamless sale I have ever had.
Mm-hmm. You wrote and directed a movie called The Homestay in 2018. How does writing a memoir compare with directing a film and writing and directing a film?
That was a short film that I directed. That was kind of the first real thing that I wrote, thinking, well, if it's bad, I can just hide it. And if it's good, it might change my career, because I had an idea that I would make it. I shot it at our house and paid for it myself, and thought, you know, if I like it, I'll pitch it as a TV show. I had an idea for a TV show. So then I did. It went to a bunch of festivals. It played at Cannes. Like, it went to a bunch of awesome places. It got me an agent. So it did wonderful things for me and started a screenwriting career, because I sold that as my first pilot. And I'm now adapting it as a feature for other producers. But how is it different from writing a book? I find it much easier to write not about myself. It's way easier to make things up. The excavation required for this book, I was not ready for it. I am grateful for it. I am 100 pounds lighter emotionally, but oh man.
Well, yeah, because you had to deal with all this turmoil, like revisit all this turmoil, and it must have taken kind of a psychic toll on you.
It really did. It was like doing 8 hours of intense therapy a day, every day for 8 years. It was a lot. Imagine addressing all of your baggage all at once.
Yeah.
Really unpleasant, but gosh, I'm a different person now than I was when I started it.
I got to ask about that. I got to follow up on that. Different how? How are you different now than since you started the memoir?
I knew that things troubled me when I started. I knew that I had some stories. I knew that I was holding on to some stories. I knew that I was holding on to some feelings, some resentments, some memories, and I didn't know why. And once I started asking why, I discovered that I had such tangled, complicated, ugly, beautiful feelings about it all. And I just had to like lay it out. You know, it was like knotting a rug out of a big ball of yarn, trying to make sense of it all. And I hope that I've succeeded, but you know, it was a real process, and I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful. It also it offered me the opportunity to talk to my family about things, about conversations we've never had, tricky things, hard times, tough relationships, even within the family. There isn't a subject now that we haven't addressed. And I know every family has their difficult conversations to have. And like, what a gift to be able to call and be like, I mean, there were a couple of things where I called and I was like, we need to talk about X, Y, Z. And they were a little uncomfortable. And I would say, well, then I'm going to have to give the money back. And that was enough to get them talking, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind that you have succeeded. Priyanka Mathew, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Bird Milk and Mosquito Bones. It's a beautifully written memoir. I'm looking forward to your next book and to all of your other projects.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to chat.
Priyanka Mathew is a writer, filmmaker, and former talent agent. She's also the author of the memoir, Bird Milk and Mosquito Bones. Find out more about Priyanka at wpr.org/beta.
I often would love to escape into other people's consciousnesses for a spell.
Coming up, Alexandra Tanner joins us to talk about her hilarious debut novel, Worry. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.